is Dr. Tim, detective, to bring you by transcription The Mystery of the Chest of Dynamite. You couldn't have asked for anything nicer than the way that day started out. Sandy and Jill, they're special pals of mine, had insisted that this was the day for the hike. 4 miles over the mountain and back again. I tried to protect my aging bones by protesting, but it was no use. I was outvoted.
Gee gosh, Dr. Tim, we've already explored everything around the cabin.
Well, sure, what's a vacation in the mountains for if you're just going to sit around and be lazy?
Besides, it isn't healthy. Everybody needs exercise.
All right, all right. But as a doctor, I resent having my own advice flung in my teeth. I merely said that a certain amount of mild exercise was good for the Constitution.
That's just it. The hike over the mountain will be just exactly that certain amount and no more.
Oh, my aching back tomorrow.
Aw, come on.
All right, all right. Jill, you fix up a lunch.
You bet I will.
And Sandy, be sure the car windows are rolled up in case of rain.
Okay.
You better lock it while you're at it. Never can tell who might come prowling around, even this far off the beaten track.
Check.
And that's how I got myself mixed up in what I like to call the mystery of the chest of dynamite. Because if we hadn't started off on that hike, I'm getting ahead of myself. Anyway, among the unusual features of the mystery, perhaps the chief one was that I got mad. Good and mad. More angry, in fact, than I had in all the years I'd gone through life as a combination of doctor and detective. Because the chief thing that makes me mad is criminal carelessness and stupidity. Well, anyway, we headed for the mountain.
Gee, Dr. Tim, aren't we going to stop and rest at all?
Exercise, my dear Jill, is excellent for the human constitution. You said so. Why should we pamper these soft bodies with restful ease when vigorous and health-giving stimulation lies right upon our path?
Boy, the next time I open my big mouth.
Of course, if I weren't about to give out myself.
Ah, relief is in sight.
I'd walk till you dropped.
I'm dropping already.
However, unless my eyes deceive me, that looks like a farmhouse to the left, about 1,000 yards away.
Oh, boy. Milk. Gallons of it.
Yeah.
No milk, unless it's pasteurized, kids. We'll have to stick to canned milk until we get back to town. I was thinking of a nice haystack to stretch out on, with the owner's permission, of course. A picnic lunch in the pasture.
Hey, somebody's waving at us.
Hmm? Well,
I see him. He's running from the house, and motioning us to come over.
I still don't. Oh, yeah, I do. I wonder what's the matter.
See, somebody must be in trouble.
Well, get your second wind and follow me. Maybe somebody's been injured. Come on, hurry up. In just a few moments, we were getting the story from the old man. He must have been near 70.
And so when I see you, I was hoping it might be some of the neighbors that could go for some help. Or just my doggone luck to have it turn out to be some city folks. Say, you're supposed to be can ride a horse,
can't you? Why, I can.
Sure, me too.
Now, just a minute, everybody. This, what's the matter?
Matter? Why, matter enough. Why, I'm up here all by myself, too darn lame to get on horseback. Yesterday and I told that darn wife of mine, and that fool daughter, too, that it just weren't right of taking the only automobile on the place and going out traipsing off there to the city. For a week, mind you. Why, they ain't even due back or day after tomorrow. And if you ask me, that's going to be too late. Yes, sir, too late. And then they'll blame me.
Now, look, blame you for what? Is something wrong?
Wrong? Why, everything's been wrong since my daughter's husband got killed in that third war. Boy, this ain't no place for a little kid, this ain't. And I said so 1,000 times.
Please, is somebody hurt? I'm a...
Hurt? Why, there ain't nothing here to hurt nobody. Why, it just came down to the sore throat as first he did. Nobody can blame me for that. If Miss Moe hadn't gone to take me off
there... Gee, Dr. Tim, I think he means there's a sick kid in that house.
Why, of course there is. Ain't I been telling you why?
Well, good gosh, why didn't you say what was the matter? Why didn't you realize that?
I didn't wait to hear more, but left Sandy and Jill explaining to the old man as I dashed inside the house and found the bedroom. Sick kid was an understatement. I didn't know what was the matter, but as I stooped down over the bed and got a look at the child, about 5 years old, I'd guess, I knew one thing. The fight was now with death. been in some tight situations, but never one like this. My car, and of course my medical bag was in it, was several miles over the mountain. The nearest phone was 14 miles away. A child was dying, and for help, I had two kids and a doddering, half-scared-to-death old man. Silently, I worked over the child, trying to ease the breathing, going over in my mind the things that might be wrong, summoning all the knowledge of my lifetime, trying to think what treatment I could give. In a few moments, the old man entered.
You're kind of sick, ain't he?
Very sick. First off, it seems to be some kind of poisoning. When did he eat last?
Well, let me see now. Oh, must have been 4 or 5 days, reckon. He ain't wanted nothing since.
Mm-hmm. What did he eat?
Oh, he ain't had nothing that I ain't had myself. Not been fine, except in this darn rheumatism. Seems like every year the darn rheumatism...
How did it start?
You mean the rheumatism? Well,
the
I guess...
child. Mm-hmm. Sore throat, cold, fever?
Well, he did sort of complain about feeling hot and chilly and said his throat was hurting.
I went over a rapid list in my mind. Diphtheria, none of the signs. Scarlet fever, same. But something toxic, something poison was working in that child's body. And unless I could find out, the end was a matter of hours. The pulse was rapid, thready, the breathing difficult, and the temperature, even without a thermometer, I knew it was dangerously high. Suddenly I had a thought. I turned to the old man. You drive a car?
Me? Nope, never been behind the wheel of one whole life.
I can, Dr. Tim. I know I'm not old enough to have a license, but my dad's been teaching me.
Where that car has to be driven, you won't need a license, Sandy. I've got to have that medical bag, and I've got to have the car here in case I decide we dare move the child and get into a hospital. And I can't leave. It'd be as bad as murder. You think you could get the car here over that trail we came in on the other day?
Well, I think so.
I ought to be shot for letting you try, but I'm afraid it means a life. Here are my keys. Catch. Now run. Run over the mountain as you've never run before. An hour passed. The child was resting more easily. Jill and I took turns wiping his face and trying to make him more comfortable. With straining ears, I listened for the car. Would Sandy make it? Well, it was too soon to tell yet. Lost in thought, it wasn't until Jill repeated what she was saying to me that it sank into my consciousness.
Dr. Tim, the old man says he doesn't want to bother you, but maybe it's time to give Jimmy some more of his medicine.
Jimmy. Strange. I never thought of the child as having a name. And then suddenly...
What? What was that you said?
His medicine. The old man's been rambling on about it since we came.
With one bound, I was at the door to the bedroom calling the old man. In a moment, he appeared.
Yes, sir. A fine kind of doctor. Not to give them folks something they can take. Why, that poor little kid in there.
You've been giving this child medicine?
Well, of course I have. Real drugstore medicine, too. The doc down there, 7 Mile, he fixed it up for me when I had a sore throat last winter. Same as kid Jimmy here, Doc.
Quick, let me have that bottle.
Yes, sir. I got right here in the medicine cabinet.
As I turned my head once again to listen to the sound of a motor car, an idea was beginning to shape itself in my mind. If that medicine was what I thought it might be, I snatched the bottle from the old man's hand as he came inside the door.
Dr. Tim, what's the matter?
Sulfur. You've been giving this child an adult dose of sulfur for 5 days.
Yeah, give it to him just like it says here on the bottle.
But, Dr. Tim, I thought the sulfur drugs were good for sore throats and all kinds of infections.
Yes, like rat poison is good for a rat.
You mean I oughtn't have done it?
Sit down and listen. Listen carefully before you murder someone else. More people have been killed by taking the wrong drugs than are killed in any war.
But the doc told me...
Yes, he told you to take it, not that child. It was your prescription for your illness. You were safe taking it. It wasn't meant for Jimmy. Do you know what's happened to that child?
Oh, what, Dr. Kim?
He's dying of uremic poisoning. That sulfa drug, too big a dose, has formed crystals in his kidneys. Has plugged them up until they can't work for Jimmy anymore. All the poisons, the waste matter from the kidneys have been killing him for days.
Well, gee willikers, Doc, I didn't mean to do anything.
Of course you didn't mean to hurt him. But you've tied the safety valve down on the boiler. Oh, I'd like to take the contents of half the medicine chests of this country and dig a pit and bury them. Evaporated iodine, left for goodness knows how long, to burn and scar an innocent victim. Poisons taken in the belief they're antiseptics. Sleeping pills that kids get hold of and kill themselves. Ammonia, lye, cleaning fluid, right in the medicine chest for folks to drink some night. Medicine chests. They're chests of dynamite, that's what. And you... Oh, what's the use? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to lose my temper. Okay, Jimmy. Lie still now. You'll be better soon. The next half hour was broken only by the softly spoken conversation between Jill and myself as we sped our thoughts to Sandy in the car. A rough job for a kid with no experience in driving.
Dr. Tim, can you do something? I mean, when your medical bag gets here.
I hope so, Jill. It all depends upon what I did the other day when I left my laboratory.
Well, what? I mean, how does that happen?
Well, I had a supply of spinal anesthetic. You know, the stuff you use for operations when you don't want to give ether. You inject it into the spine.
Uh-huh, I know.
I think I put it in my bag. I'm praying that I did.
Will spinal anesthetic help?
It will probably save Jimmy's life. You see, Jill, in the last war, a lot of soldiers took an overdose of sulfur. They didn't know they were supposed to drink lots of water and take baking soda with it. And at first, the Army doctors thought the only way to save their lives was to operate upon the kidneys.
You mean there was another way?
Well, sure. The doctors discovered, by accident, that when they gave the spinal anesthetic to get the soldier ready for the operation, the anesthetic itself often seemed to start the kidneys to working again, without the operation.
Golly. And if you do have some in your bag...
Yes. Even at that, it's dangerous business, Jill. To inject that anesthetic is dangerous in itself. It really should be done in a hospital. But driving 40 miles over these roads would mean sure death for Jimmy.
Listen!
Oh, Lord. It has to be. Run! Run, Jill! Quick! Well, Sandy was the hero of the day, all right. Although I wake up nights sometimes in horror at the thought of his wrestling that car over the trail to the ranch. Luck had been with me. That medicine was in my bag. A couple of times we thought we'd lose Jimmy, but he did pull through. But the funny thing was the way my getting sore acted on the old farmer. As soon as Jimmy pulled over the hump, he had a celebration. I was napping peacefully on the couch when...
Oh, okay, Doc. I done it. I tore that medicine chest plumb out of there. Ain't going to have no more dynamite around here. No siree, bub.
Well, I chuckled to myself. You're never too old to learn. This is Dr. Tim Detective saying so long until next week at this same time when Sandy, Jill, and I will bring you the exciting transcribed mystery of the Poisoner at Large.